Great to have you with us on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. Medical show for you today, and we're going to begin by talking with you about enlarged prostate. It's also called benign prostatic hyperplasia, or BPH, and it is a problem for many men. In fact, by the age of 80, more than 90% of men will be dealing with it. Today, we'll talk about a laser procedure that can help. And a couple of guests for you. One, Dr. Dan Gralnick. Dr. Gralnick, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks very much for the opportunity, Larry. Glad to be here.
Appreciate it very much. Our other guest, Dr. Chris Manicus. Thank you for joining us as well, Dr. Manicus.
Good morning, Larry. Thanks for the chance to be here today. Looking forward to it.
I should mention they are both urologists with UW Health and teach at the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health, and it's great to have them with us. Between them, they do over 300 of these procedures a year, which is more than almost anywhere else in the country. And so as we talk with them, what would you like to know about the laser procedure? I'd love to have you part of the conversation. Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234, or you can send us an email to ideas@wpr.org. Dr. Manicus, let's start with you. Maybe you could explain why so many men have problems with an enlarged prostate.
Well, it is. It's a lot of men. Most men over the age of 50 will start to experience symptoms. It has to do with, it's best explained by talking about prostate function and then these changes that are a common part of aging that result in symptoms that we have plenty of treatments for. So the prostate's a reproductive gland. Its function is to make seminal fluid. And as we age, there's problems that can develop. And of course, we always draw the distinction early in the conversation between a cancerous prostate trouble, a prostate cancer tumor that's growing. That's very distinct from this benign prostate growth. And, the reality is all those symptoms that men tend to associate with getting older, the slow stream, the getting up at night, the trouble getting started, especially in the morning, the urgency that then develops when you get out of the car, when they hit the cold weather, all those triggers and those symptoms that start to accumulate in the 50s, 60s, 70s, that's not going to be from a prostate cancer historically. The vast majority of the time, that's from this benign prostate growth. And on average, you're going to see this organ that's supposed to be the size of a walnut, a golf ball, if you will. You're gonna see that grow slowly. Now, some men, as Dan and I like to refer to them, they're just overachievers, and that's really where this hole-up procedure comes in. You turn this because of a genetic predisposition or some other factors, a golf ball might be a grapefruit, and because of where it's sitting, it's right there at the bottom of the bladder. It's the first thing urine flows through on its way out of you, and so this drain is clogged, and that's when we come in. And so this, you asked about BPH and why it's so common, because every man has a prostate and every prostate is growing, and just it grows to varying degrees. And that's when you start looking into, well, how can we really help the problem?
Yeah. Well, Dr. Gralnick, maybe turn to you. I mean, are there serious health problems associated with it? Certainly having to get up in the middle of the night to go to the bathroom a couple of times may be considered a serious problem for some.
Those are more quality of life issues. I mean, they can affect your sleep well enough, but there can be problems with enlargement of the prostate, eventually basically making it impossible to empty the bladder, so that some people have to have a catheter or a tube in the bladder to help it empty. Rarely you can have problems where the kidneys shut down because the urine backs up into them. And those are the things that that are medically urgent, where people really have to do something about it. But those are sort of the main reasons that it's not just a quality of life issue, which it is in probably 85 to 90% of men. It's just a bother.
Yeah. When should you go and see your physician? You have that, have this issue.
Well, certainly, if you have any blood in the urine or infections in the urine, if you feel like you're not emptying the bladder, or if it's getting to the point where it bothers you, those are certainly reasons people would go to their physician. And routine tests may indicate that you have a problem that you're not even aware of.
What about preventing? Can it be prevented? Maybe Dr. Manicus, you could take that.
That's a great question, Larry. I think there's been a lot of research on why this process happens. You know, we actually have a relatively poor understanding of what causes these changes to happen in, as men as they age, and why some men are so have such a dramatic growth of the prostate, a mega prostate, a prostate that's 10, 15, 20 times normal size. So actually UW is a leading center in the world for some of this benign prostate research, but what we don't have are great, supplements or vitamins that you can or should be taking. From a behavior standpoint, we know that, the morbidly obese patient, because of some hormonal changes related to carrying a lot of extra weight, they are going to be at a higher risk of having prostate growth. So you tend to pivot back to the concept of living a heart-healthy lifestyle, because in the end, that's what's going to be most likely to negatively affect your quality of life. But there's no shortage of – and I think you talk about what you can do to prevent. So one of the great thresholds that I use in discussing with patients of, hey, should we do something about this, is if you're watching the – countless commercials that are on at all hours of the day that say that are advertising some supplement that is going to be, you know, call this number and for the low price minus, you know, with shipping and handling, et cetera, we'll mail it to your home every month. Just give us your credit card. If you look at that and you think that sounds like a good idea, then please come talk to us about it, because there are some very meaningful interventions that are non-invasive. You know, it doesn't have to be a big surgery or medications with big side effects with long-term consequences. There are, we take a stepwise approach. And your concept about prevention, what I'll start with though, is whenever we meet somebody new who has these issues, you always start with the easy and correctable and non-invasive treatments, right? It's not take this pill. It's, well, you're in here talking to me about how often you're going to the bathroom, Larry. And I don't mean to get personal, Larry.
That's but all right. If you're,
you look like a lot of my patients. I'll say maybe we should get you set up for a consult. No, I think we start talking immediately about how much you're putting in. Because if you're talking to me about how often you're going to the bathroom and you tell me about how you fill up your water bottle every time you go to the bathroom, well, let's add up how much you're putting in. Because if you're drinking a gallon and a half of water, coffee, Mountain Dew, or Red Bull a day, I can't help you. Okay.
Or six beers. There's limits. Or something.
Yeah. Or right. Yeah. And if you're doing that at work, right. So you start with what goes in, because it eventually must come out. And it's not just how much, but it's the quality of what you're drinking. And so yes, coffee's an irritant. Okay. Even decaf. Artificial sweeteners found in almost everything that's low calorie, zero calorie. You know, these are things that are triggers for some, but not all people. And if you can link every time you drink a half a gallon of Diet Mountain Dew that you're going to be in the bathroom the next 3 hours, well, we've solved the problem. But that sometimes it's that simple. Okay. The other thing I'll mention though are a careful history with folks is so important, because you come up with some, you know, something as basic as a urinalysis to make sure that we're not missing sugar in the urine, that we're not missing an infection or blood in the urine that's only microscopic. You know, it doesn't have to be visible in the toilet for it to be in the urine and for us to be concerned about it. And so these are real issues that we need to check the box on before we start talking about, hey, it's your prostate and that's the problem. The other thing in the history that I just want to mention is you know, your medications. A lot of folks are already coming in and they're taking pills that might affect urine output. For example, a water pill or a diuretic. Well, don't take that at 9 o'clock at night, right before you go to bed with 2 cups of water. You're laughing, Larry, but this is my everyday. All right. I think there's prevention is a key piece of it. But you know, we also, as soon as somebody meets us, we're asking these questions about what drives you, what brought you here. I know what it takes for me to come to the doctor's office and actually keep the appointment, and you try to be respectful of that and be and cut to the chase though. Like if nighttime is what really bothers you, okay, well, let's do a quick check and see, do you meet a screening criteria for sleep apnea, Larry? You know, that's actually one of the most common non-urologic causes of nighttime frequent urination. And half of my patients meet a threshold of needing to get a sleep study. So it's a whole person approach. And then when we finally isolate the fact that, yeah, your bladder doesn't empty, you are in the bathroom every 2 hours because the tank is only ever getting a third empty. You're carrying around, you know, a quart of urine in your bladder that's never getting out because the drain is clogged. That's when we come with a solution that is, in this whole lip surgery, is durable, it's safe, it allows you to stop medications. And yeah, we don't necessarily have to talk hole up right now, but that's what an evaluation looks like in the beginning with our patients. And it's not jumping straight to surgery. It's what is right for you and focusing on what your problem is and how we're going to solve it.
Well, let's jump to the laser surgery that you guys are involved in and have done quite a few times. And it's a laser treatment. I don't know, Dr. Groundling, maybe you could talk for a minute here about what this involves and maybe how, and then you can back and forth about how it might compare to other. And we do have a number of people online who want to visit with you too, but I want to get this out before we go to the phones for sure.
Sure.
Perfect. So the surgery is about an hour and a half outpatient procedure that's done entirely through a camera in the penis and the urethra while people are either asleep or numb from the waist down. And through this camera, we're able to put in this a very small laser, and it's able to remove the inner part of the prostate. If you imagine the prostate's like an orange, it takes the fruit out and leaves the rind behind. And the laser does a very good job in terms of stopping bleeding, where the old surgery really had quite a bit of problems with bleeding. And so we're able to get the pieces of the prostate out through that same camera using something called a morcellator, which is sort of a grinder. And we pull the pieces out of the prostate through the camera. We leave a catheter in usually for a day or two, and people go home same day. And surprisingly, it's not a particularly uncomfortable or painful procedure at all. And so most people are either taking out their catheter a day or two later or coming in and having that done. And then afterwards, they're finding they're able to go to the bathroom like they did when they were 10 or 11 years old, an incredibly powerful stream where they can empty their bladder quickly. And after a week or two of healing, a lot of people are able to sleep through the night without a problem.
That's amazing. I'm sure there are lots of things we can talk about relating to this surgery, but we can talk about other approaches as well and interventions as well with our two guests today, Dr. Chris Matticus, Dr. Dan Groundling, both with the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health. Great to have them with us, and great to have Jill Nadeau as our producer and Tyler Ditter as our engineer. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Talking about a new procedure for dealing with enlarged prostates with our two guests today, Dr. Chris Matticus, urologist with UW Health Hospitals, Dr. Dan Groundling, also a urologist with UW Health Hospitals. It's great to have them with us, and they have a new surgery, relatively new surgery. They've done it quite a few times now that involves laser treatments. And so we're taking your questions as well, and we'll get to those in just a minute. I want to just go back to this. Who is the person, well, let me put it this way. Who are the good candidates for this procedure? Dr. Manicus, do you want to take it?
Sure. No, happy to. So the index patient is a gentleman with urinary symptoms that interrupt their daily life. And it's bad enough for them to want to take a medication or a supplement. And maybe they don't like the side effects of that medicine. Maybe they didn't reach their treatment goals with that medication, and they're ready to move on to the next step. And whether it's a small prostate or a very, very, very large prostate, HOLEP can handle all of it, and it's unique that way. Again, HOLEP is this an acronym for the holmium laser enucleation of the prostate procedure. So it's any man who has enlarged prostate or symptoms that can be attributed to an enlarged prostate. Certainly men who have a catheter, this is one of the best, if not the best, procedure at getting patients catheter-free, regardless of the reason why. Recurrent bleeding from prostate issues, and recurrent infections. These are kind of the rotating theme of patients that we have coming through the surgery center. So it's some things I want to make sure we mention is that more and more often patients, because of unrelated health issues, are on a blood thinner, whether it's aspirin or other blood thinners, some of the newer drugs that are like warfarin that are thinning the blood because of an abnormal heart rhythm. Well, very frequently patients and their physicians are reluctant to stop those blood thinners, which has historically very much limited the ability to intervene surgically. Well, that's just not the case with HOLEP. We can perform the surgery while patients are on these blood thinners with minimal increased risk of a bleeding issue. So, Larry, who's a candidate? It's really anyone that wants to take the next step and just solve their prostate problem in a very durable way, which HOLEP is very good at.
We have a number of callers online with questions. Bill in Mauston has a question for you guys, so let's go there. Bill, thank you for waiting.
It was a pleasure. This is an interesting program. I'm an 80-year-old male, and my urologist at the Mayo Clinic in La Crosse has me on a six-month visit, and I'm only taking Tamsulosin, which helps me urinate at night, but I've discovered that if I don't drink water after like 5:30 but go to bed at 10, I only need to get up once, maybe twice. But my father died at age 74 of prostate cancer, and my brother at that same age had radiation treatment for prostate cancer. So at age 80, I'm concerned about myself. But I notice in a newspaper they talked about a new prostate imaging technology called micro-ultrasound, and they claim it makes monitoring easier and cheaper and without any invasive biopsy of the prostate gland. Are these doctors familiar with that, and is it available somewhere?
Dr. Grelnick, maybe you can discuss that. I'm sorry, Doctor. You have not heard of it? Dr. Manicus, go ahead.
No, I really appreciate it, sir. Thanks for calling in. I think what I'm hearing is that it sounds like a concern about possible prostate cancer in the family related to a family history. And I think most importantly, you've got a urologist. And a urologist is going to have that on their radar, and there are tests that can be done that whether or not it's this ultrasound, which I'm not quite familiar with, But there's testing and something that's as simple as a blood test, simple as a rectal exam, to have the reassurance that everyone needs to make sure there isn't a significant cancer. Truly, if you've had the blood work done to this point and you're 80 years old and they haven't found a prostate cancer, you're probably not going to have trouble with it.
There we go. Thank you so much for calling, Bill. Gary in Iron River emailed to ask what percentage of patients getting the laser treatment we were talking about, what percentage end up with long-term incontinence? Is there a specific patient characteristic that makes this more likely? And how widespread is the availability of the technique? All good questions.
Those are great questions. So the technique is relatively new, and so there's not very many locations where it's being done. And I've forgotten the other parts of the question.
Well, so is there, what about long-term incontinence?
Oh, thank you. So that's one of the biggest things we are concerned about after this procedure. It's somewhere in the neighborhood of 1%. Temporarily, people do have some issues for a few weeks with leakage, but that is not a long-term problem.
Okay.
People that are at higher risk are those that have other issues like Parkinson's, probably the biggest one, and a few people who have had strokes.
Okay, that's I think we got all of Gary's questions there. Carl in Eagle River, let's give you a chance. Hi, Carl.
Thank you so much. My question is, I was wondering, my father had prostate cancer, and I was wondering what are the chances of me also having, and what should I be looking for in terms of symptoms?
Dr. Manicus?
Carl, great questions, and I'm glad that you're trying to be proactive about it. Truly, your question about symptoms for prostate cancer, if you wait until there's symptoms for prostate cancer, we waited far too long. It sounds like your father was diagnosed with prostate cancer, and the most important thing you can do is work with your primary care physician and discuss prostate cancer screening using a blood test. It's a blood test called a PSA. This is something that any lab can do. It's a separate test, though, that needs to be specially requested. It's not on a standard panel of labs. But it's the best tool we have combined with some other diagnostic tests if the PSA is abnormal. It's the best tool we have to find cancer when it's early enough to cure. And we're really a lot better at that now than we were, 10, 20, 30 years ago. So a lot of controversy about PSA that we could never cover right now, but it still is the most important tool we have to find prostate cancer early in men who would benefit from that treatment.
Thank you very much, Carl. Let's go to Tim in Madison. Tim, thank you for calling.
Yeah, thank you. So I wanted to say, first of all, that I'm just thrilled to hear that the University Hospital System is now offering HoLEP. I myself have had HoLEP and am a huge advocate for its efficacy and how, in terms of changing lifestyle and with minimal side effects. I will say that I had it done, unfortunately, not in the university hospital system, because at the time it was not being offered here. I had to have it done in Indiana, Indianapolis, because the insurance company twice denied me the ability to go out of network to have it done, and then finally did agree. So I'm thrilled that it's currently being offered. And I'm a huge advocate for people that it's appropriate for. It's been a life changer for me.
Tim, thank you very much for calling with that good report and what he brought up about insurance. Typically now, it's certainly available now at UW Health. Is insurance covering typically this procedure? Dr. Manicus, you want to, or Dr.
Yeah, sure.
Brownlee?
That's an easy question, and I'm so glad Tim had a good outcome. I think he's not alone, and truly we're privileged to really be able to offer the surgery to patients here in Wisconsin. As a matter of routine, your insurance does matter, but it's more just, you know, certain insurances will make you go to certain health systems. But it's in general a covered service. Medicare completely covers it, all the diagnostic testing that goes into getting ready for surgery. This is not experimental. They're, the only challenges that we've ever had with insurance covering this here have been related to, you know, things like, you know, certain insurance companies and how hospital systems just don't have a contract. And so none of that has been an obstacle because patients have it cleared before they ever come to surgery. So no one gets unexpected charges, of course. And so go ahead. Dan's got a comment.
I was just going to say that because this is not offered in very many locations, many other insurance companies will cover it. So like Dean or places with Mayo, where they don't have anybody else doing this, they have been covering it as well as the VA.
Oh, all right. So good news there. Thank you, Tim, again. I'm so glad you had that great outcome. Let's go to Gary in De Pere next. Gary, hi.
Hi, I got two questions. The urethra runs right through the prostate. And if you go up in there and take chunks out, aren't you taking chunks out of the urethra? That's my first question. My second one is, if there's cancer cells in the prostate, is this laser going to disturb them?
Okay. Good questions. Who wants to, Dr. Manicus, we'll go to you first.
So I'll take the urethra question. So Gary, I have had to answer that question probably 350 times out of the 350 patients I've done this on myself. You're astute. You've looked into it. Hopefully you haven't done the YouTube videos that I did because, it gets a little graphic, but I think that the key is just understanding the anatomy between bladder and the tip of the urethra. The urine flows through the prostate. There is not a separate tube that we have to preserve. It's not like a urethral cylinder there that needs to be preserved. The true urethra starts downstream of the sphincter, no pun intended. And then, you know, what happens after the prostate's removed during the laser surgery, or at least partially removed, is there's a lining that has to regrow in this, you know, think of it as a divot, and you swung that 9-iron and you got this big chunk. Well, you need to let it give it some time to regrow that lining. And that's what the recovery is actually all about. So your question about the urethra is very common. I've worked on my ability to answer it, but hopefully that's good enough for you. And then the questions about cancer, Dan.
The cancer that we find in the prostate tissue on occasion, surgery that we do, and we've ended up removing the vast majority of the cancer cells themselves. A lot of people won't need anything except follow-up tests. This, but it's something that we do look at with the surgery. We look at all the prostate tissue that we remove to make sure there isn't any cancer.
Makes good sense. Gary, thank you again for calling. Appreciate it. You can join in too, 800-642-1234. Give a call. Ken in Little Chute emailed to ask you to discuss UroLift system to treat BPH. Any comments on that, Chris? You want to, Dr.
Sure.
Manicus, you want to?
So UroLift is, you know, one of the things we could spend hours talking about are the many different ways that the field has come up with to try to address the problem of obstructed flow. Okay, so there's The gold standard historically has been a scraping procedure that chips away at the prostate, little pieces at a time, that relieve the blockage that way. That's your kind of classic Roto-Rooter job that, you know, needs to be redone in 5, 10, 20 years, usually, you know. Now, short of that, you know, as gold standard, there's been several different interventions that have come and gone over the last 30 to 40 years. And some of the themes we've seen is like, well, hey, what if we could just, what if we could just prop it open? Okay. And they did that several years ago for scar tissue in the urethra, you know, kind of like create a scaffolding that would keep it open and prevent it from scarring shut again. Well, that didn't work. And that came and went off the market. And something that's different, but it's a similar concept, is this UroLift. And the UroLift is great in patients that have smaller prostates, and they have some priorities around preserving ejaculation function. But all it does, all the UroLift does is, it's a procedure, it's a scope in the penis. And what they do is it's a stapling procedure that opens up the urethra by squeezing the lobes and compressing the lobes. But it doesn't do anything to stop that prostate from growing. And one of the things we see is that it's a good, in fact, an excellent short-term solution for most of the men that go through it. And with careful patient selection, they have a great outcome. Where it fails is in about 25% of men, though, all comers, they need to have something done again in 2 years. And that's a pretty high retreatment rate for a procedure like that. But it's low side effect, high reward, and for men that are interested in it, it's a great option.
We have Denny in Waupaca with a question. Denny, hi.
Hi, I don't even know if I should. I'll try to explain this to you as quickly as I can. I'm 71, 16 years ago, I was diagnosed with prostate cancer in an unusual way. I doctored with my local doctor, excellent. They did a PSA test. It was negligible, maybe slightly elevated. Come back in a year. In the meantime, I was doctoring with a man who started a homeopathic practice, but he spent 17 years as a licensed internist, so it was kind of a dual practice. I ran a test, and I do not know the name of it. I'm embarrassed to say that, but it was kind of an alternative test, looked at 200 parts of my body and lots of things, and when I got it back, I said, you have low-grade prostate cancer. It's likely just started. I asked him, did you run a PSA test? He said, no, I did not pursue how he knew it. I had an entree to male. They said, yep, that's what you have. I had a lot of options. I'm a 106 robotic prostate cancer patient. I'm in a long-term, hey, come back and see me thing. I'm completely healthy. But I was kind of a guy with a marginal PSA, and yet through running an alternative test that I do not know the name of, my doctor at that time said, no, I'm 99% sure this is what you have, and he identified it perfectly. Boy, is that a mystery to me, so maybe you know more than me.
Oh, all right. Dr. Manicky?
I appreciate the story. I can't for the life of me think of what version of a blood test that they might have done to try and identify prostate cancer. They go, that's not anything that I can report on being mainstream right now. Still, the hallmark of prostate cancer diagnosis is tissue sampling. We have to biopsy the prostate somehow to prove that there's cancer. And then you come up with the treatment plan depending on how aggressive that biopsy looks. I do just want to mention again, those are, and I'm, these are, of course, prostate cancer is very separate from this benign prostate growth, but prostate cancer is incredibly common, and we manage both conditions. So we're going to, if there was a full panel of labs that existed that was reliable enough to use and replace current practices, I think, you know, I haven't heard of anything like it. Have you, Dan?
Yeah. Chris in Janesville, let's go to you. Chris, hi.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I had the green laser light procedure done about 10 years ago, and I'm scheduled to have it again for a second time next month. I'm anxious about incontinence. Is it typical for it to regrow? It never really did help a lot. I'm on finasteride, tabulotin, and I'm just out of my mind, so I want the surgery again, and I hope I'm not being impulsive.
Well, Dr. Gralnick, you want to comment?
Sure. The green light procedure, which is also called PVP or vaporization of the prostate, it works on the inner surface of the prostate, and it will sort of burn away part of the inner part of the prostate. It works well for some people. It often has to be redone, probably in a 3 to 10 year range. And it doesn't prevent anything else from being done. Some people do need it repeated. The procedure that we do removes more of the tissue, and so we've seen a lot of people who've had the PVP before, and they've done quite well.
So Chris, for example, or somebody like Chris could come to you guys and still have, even though they had the other procedure, they could have this laser, your laser procedure, and it would not
Absolutely.
Be a problem.
Correct.
Yeah. So, Chris, there you go. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Well, how do people find out more about this laser surgery? I imagine you have that up on your own UW Health website.
That's correct. I think we've got some updated content now at the uwhealth.org website. Within the search field, just type in HOLEP, H-O-L-E-P. And of course, you can visit our department site at urology.wisc.edu. And a phone number for a consultation, of course, is welcome to anyone. You don't necessarily need a referral from primary care, depending on your insurance. And phone number best to reach us at is 608-263-4757. Again, that's 608-263-4757. And it's really been a pleasure talking to the audience and Larry and maybe a little bit Dr. Gralnick.
Well, it's been a pleasure for me talking to you. It sounds like an amazing opportunity for a lot of people, maybe at some point even for me. I don't know. We'll have to see. Thanks, both.
Yeah, Larry, we'll have you fill out some paperwork. We'll see you soon.
Thanks, Chris and Dan. Oh, man. Dr. Chris Mattingus, a urologist with UW Hospitals, and Dr. Dan Gralnick is a urologist with UW Hospitals as well. And they teach at the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health as well. It's great to have them with us. And I expect maybe we'll get these two guys back. I'll have to, this summer when the golf gets going, I'll have to get them out for golf, and maybe I can get a free diagnosis while we're on the golf course. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it very much. Well, we're going to turn our attention to some other doctors and talk with you about, cancer came up a little bit here in our conversation with our two guests, but our next two guests are going to be talking about things we can do to avoid cancer in the first place. That coming up next on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.